Around the NFL podcast. Doesn't believe in Bigfoot.
Welcome to the Around the NFL podcast presented by the United States Marine Corps. My name is Dan Hansis. I'm joined in a room filled with heroes, Mark Sessler, Chris Wessling, and Greg Rosenthal. What is up, boys?
Hey, Dan.
I mean, you can just count up the things to be disappointed about and upset about right now. Almost lost my hearing. There was a ear can issue just now. We just talked about they totally, Mark, botched the Terminator sequel rollout. We were talking about that before we went
right
there. You can't go the way they've handled everything since T2 is a disaster. The Jets and Browns are combined 3-13.
Which feels disaster. Like both of their final records at this point.
Greg will not stop talking about how they're not giving him a proper starch in the dinner meal, which Greg, the other side of Greg, I know would then say, well, you can't really complain about.
Yeah,
that
no,
it's free.
I should. I always kept something in the freezer. You know, because ultimately they're giving us free food, so it's tough. It's tough to complain. But if you're gonna put it
out,
it is just crazy.
He's fine.
Wings and carrots. That's not a meal. You got to have something to balance whatever.
Well,
I'm
with you, but you claim that it's tough to complain. It didn't seem that tough for you to complain about this.
No,
I don't believe in Bigfoot, but I could spend hours on cryptozoology.
All right. See, Wes is fine. This is Wes had the right idea. You know, Wes never, he divorced himself from the Bengals, so he has no trauma to deal with on a, you know, weekly basis. And he's not a foodie at the level Greg is, although you are a great cook, a chef. There is a difference, though.
I'm still refining my palate where I believe Greg's has been refined for 15
that's
years.
That's not true at all.
Okay. Anyway, but we get to talk about football for a living. We get paid for it. So everything's fine on balance, and we have a whole slate of games to talk about. This is, of course, the flagship program, which you could catch in podcast form and also video form, both on NFL.com and YouTube. And that's cool, right, Ricky?
Yeah.
And Ricky's our producer. Like, sorry. Erica Tamposi is our producer.
That's the coolest part about it.
And, you know,
everything.
Four of us are happy about that. I'm not sure the actual producer is that happy
I'm
about
very,
it.
You're putting a really false narrative out into the world.
Oh.
Okay?
That's possible, too. I'm exploring the issue. I'm not sure what the answer
what
is.
What I get to do every day. You know, they say you want to wake up with a smile on your face going into work, and that's exactly how I feel.
I bet.
We can feel that, too.
All right, so we're going to go through all of the games that were played on Sunday. The first game that was played, of course, in London. The final game that was played in Baltimore. And we're going to break it down with some analysis and, you know, just a touch of mirth. Everybody in my mentions, oh, Dan, how are you going to do the show today? You know, the Jets are so bad. You know what? You process these things over time.
Also, what has been the beeline of our entire time doing this show? Half our teams that we root for sucking like gigantic trash bags floating in from outer space.
Yes. Done like 1,000 shows. The Jets have sucked virtually the entire time. I've gotten quite good at, you know, compartmentalizing that. Usually. Let us go. Get going. We're going to start with a really nice game. An inter-conference game? Intra-conference game?
Don't even.
We've...
To Arrowhead Stadium.
He's right in the middle of the field. Will the Vikings call timeout to freeze it? No, they will not. Placement is down. Butker's kick is up. And the kick is good. He got it. Butker got it. And the Chiefs have won the game in regulation. Harrison Butker, game winner. Kansas City in 6-3. Never felt so good.
Mitch Holt is KCFX. More like butt kicker. Nailed it. Harrison Butker split the uprights from 40 yards out at the gun, lifting the Chiefs to a big 26-23 win over the Vikings. Butker was swallowed up by teammates near midfield after the game-winning kick. Most notably, Patrick Mahomes in that mix, the injured quarterback, who is expected to return to action next week against the Titans. And, gentlemen, such an important win for the Chiefs. Because, listen, even though the Raiders have been a nice surprise, they are, you know, a 500 or thereabout team. They're a 7-9, 10 if they get super frisky team.
Hanging around.
But you know what? The Chiefs aren't looking just to win the AFC West. They want to get the bye. It is a Super Bowl or bust season for the Chiefs, which means go get 11 wins, go get 12 wins. And with Patrick Mahomes missing these games, they had to figure out a way to win at least one of them. They got a game today. So they're 6-3. And like I said, Mahomes is supposed to come back next week against an eminently beatable Titans team. They are in good position to make a run in the back half of the season. And as for this game, Minnesota, we talked about on Thursday, would they be able to show up in a game with Kirk Cousins historically struggling against over 500 teams? And would they be ready for a come down? Not quite. The Vikings were winning this game. They went ahead on a touchdown in the fourth quarter. And the Chiefs showed that they're not just all Patrick Mahomes. And Matt Moore, Wes, has done a very nice job in these past 2 weeks keeping this offense afloat.
Yeah, I used to think you get a good backup quarterback in case your quarterback goes out for the year. But now it's, you know, to really tie you over, you know, for a game or two, just to keep you, you know, to worry about home field advantage in the playoffs, to keep you in the playoff race. And a veteran like Matt Moore is one of the better backup quarterbacks in the league, even after a year out of the league.
He was smart. He had offers, you know, according to NBC last year, to return to the game, and he didn't want to, at his age, and he's had, you know, ups and downs. He only wanted to do it if he had a chance to succeed. You have Andy Reid call. You go do it. I've said it a million times on this podcast. I think he's the most influential, important offensive coach of this century, of the last two decades. And this is an example why. You don't have Patrick Mahomes, but you do have Tyreek Hill, which makes a huge difference. You get him the ball. But some of these throws Moore was making were under pressure. They weren't easy. And I'm happy to have another Matt Moore moment.
I kind of love watching Matt Moore float up and down the sideline after some of those scoring drives by the Chiefs. He just looks the part, and it's amazing that he was out of football. I think from the very beginning, when he's had to step in, he hasn't been afraid to play with aggression. He's thrown the ball downfield, and it hasn't. He was punished today, had a bad fumble at one point, but he made enough plays, and you're right, he could have gone back to Miami or to a team where wanted to turn him into a starter. He's on a team surrounding him with a lot of talent
when
and weapons.
When he rallied the, I think it was the 09 Panthers, they were a kind of a dead team that he went 4-5-1 with. I always thought he was like a poor man's Romo, because he'll go for it. Like, he'll be aggressive, and he has a knack for making those big plays.
Damian Williams was another big player in this game. He had a 91-yard touchdown run in the third quarter that really was such a huge play in this game. And when LeSean McCoy came aboard in Kansas City, it felt like he was going to become the guy back there. But Williams has made sure he doesn't get lost in the shuffle. So he's an important player there. And as you said, Tyreek Hill, 140 yards. That's the most yards receiving since week 11 of last season. And you just get the feeling that this team has a really nice run in them in the second half here, where they're going to be right there in the mix for a bye. And if by some possibility the Patriots stumble, maybe don't completely rule them out of that number one seed just yet.
I would say also, if you're one of the teams, a contending team, with one of the few kickers that you can rely on from week to week,
the butt kicker.
He is one of those guys. You're set apart, because I'll even look at New England and say they have kicker issues right now that are causing them to re-strategize their approach to offense. And we've seen that for week after week. Kansas City in Butker's got one of the dudes you can just – he's gonna get it done week after week.
Well, this is the team the Chiefs, I thought about it, have wanted to have on the field other than Mahomes for a while. You have Watkins and Hill healthy at the same time. I mean, Hill, some of these catches he made, great wide receivers could not make. And then more importantly, I think Chris Jones returns today and has a monster game, and they have their best defensive game of the year. 308 yards to a Vikings offense, 4.7 yards per play, that was playing quite well. That's as good as the Chiefs have been this year.
Diggs and Thielen combined for one catch and 4 yards, and I saw that Thielen aggravated his hamstring.
Right,
and
Thielen was out for most of the game.
He did, and Cousins, statistically, it didn't look like he had a bad day, but I wouldn't say he was nearly the guy he's been in recent weeks. Good stat from ESPN, he was 0 for 9 when passing under duress, the worst of his career and the second most attempts without a completion in those situations this season, joining a Cam Newton with a banged up shoulder slash foot. You never want to be in that group in 2019. So we'll get into the Vikings a little bit more in the days ahead. But I thought this was about the Chiefs and a really nice win as they spin forward into the second half. Let's move on.
Vinatieri in his 24th year out of South Dakota State. Here comes the snap. It's down. The kick by Vinatieri is on its way.
It's missed.
It's missed. The Steelers dodge a huge bullet. And Anna Vinatieri over his career hasn't done this but a handful of times. 43 wide left, and I see a victory formation for the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Bill Hillgrove.
I call him Bill Grove.
Bill Grove, WDVE with the call. You know, the open end of Heinz Field has claimed the souls of many a kicker. On Sunday, it got Adam Vinatieri. His 43-yard attempt with 1:14 to play drifted left. And the Steelers escape, 26-24, win over the Colts. That's three straight wins for the Mason Rudolph-led Steelers, who have worked their way back to 500 after an 0-3 start. Wes, here's what Mike Tomlin had to say. It's good to be sitting at 4-4. I never thought I'd hear myself say that. Come on, let's give the black and yellow some love, Chris.
We'll give this defense a lot of love. They played really well, and they are a takeaway happy defense. Minka Fitzpatrick, a pick six early in the game to tie it when it looked like the Colts could run away. Yeah, I'm no longer worried about that trade, even if Mason Rudolph doesn't get better and they fall apart the rest of the way because they're not going to draft in the top five. And Minka Fitzpatrick has been a Pro Bowl player for them. He's been fantastic. So they did fine in that trade. They did really well. T.J. Watt had another good game. Bud Dupree, who's had a really good contract year, had two sacks and a huge third down stuff on Marlon Mack that forced that 43-yard field goal for Vinatieri. The Steelers' defense played great. There is no quarterback that bothers me to watch than Mason Rudolph. I would rather watch Mitch Trubisky than Mason Rudolph.
You take that back.
Times. I will not take that back. Mason Rudolph, I mean, when we watch quarterbacks, they're all sort of an avatar for kind of like how we would like to see a quarterback play. And Mason Rudolph's brand of training wheels, checkdowns, and screen passes versus every single time he's allowed to drop back, panics and throws up a jump ball. I just can't with this guy.
Not the future in Pittsburgh.
No, there's no way this guy's – I know it's early, but he would have to do a complete 180. I still think the better quarterback is sitting on the bench, and I know his physical limitations, but he's more decisive with the ball. He sees the field better. He doesn't panic in the pocket, and there's a sense of rhythm when he's quarterbacking, whereas with Mason Rudolph, there's no rhythm.
So when we opened up calling the Steelers the Mason Rudolph-led Steelers, you'd have an issue with that.
It was sort of like when we had the Brock Osweiler-led Texans.
I remember you had issues with that, too.
he
did lead the Texans to a really nice season.
He absolutely did.
Yeah, about 5 yards per attempt for Rudolph. And because of this win, you know, the Steelers fans, they come honking. I mean, they weren't happy, apparently, about how I talked about it or how we talked about it. And, you know, I will admit, if you can beat a Colts team with Brian Hoyer at quarterback and without T.Y. Hilton on a missed field goal at the buzzer, I mean, who can argue that this
not
is a great
look,
team?
Greg.
Who could argue?
Not a great look. We should talk about
Greg
it.
Greg is hitting out 8 minutes.
I mean, Brian Hoyer was playing quarterback the whole game, and they didn't have Hilton. Please.
Jacoby Brissett, his blocker kind of bangs into his knee, which buckles. He misses the rest of the game. He was grabbing at the knee like a guy who blew out his knee initially. So luckily, it doesn't seem to be that bad. I believe Frank Reich said after the game that it was like an MCL-ish sprain. So it could be a lot worse, could be better. And we'll see what his availability is going forward. Hoyer is a perfectly fine backup, especially considering, well, they should have kept Chad Swag Kelly. I could have won sandwiches.
Well, absolutely,
he might be
starting this week, but instead they have Hoyer. How did he look in the event we get to see more Brian Hoyer going forward?
I think on the Brian Hoyer spectrum, this was about an 8.5 out of 10. He did as well as you can expect Brian Hoyer to do. 3 touchdowns, outplayed the other team's quarterback by quite a bit.
All right, we get it. Mason's trying his best. Okay,
I'm not sure he is.
Dang.
And by the way, I'm sort of, you know, having fun with the Steelers. They're fine. And the least surprising thing that happened in all of these games today was that this game came down to the final kick. And that would be in the case of Brissett. Even if Brissett and Hilton are out there, these teams are just destined to play a one-score game. The Colts have done it 8 straight weeks. This is who the Colts are.
Well, even if he made the kick, you know, you still would have had a chance for Mason Rudolph to lead the Steelers down the field.
Paris Campbell showed up.
Paris Campbell showed up. And
Zach Pascal.
He was in the building.
Things did not go well for Paris Campbell. They had a lot of package plays for him. He fumbled one kickoff to open the second quarter. Luckily, Zach Pascal fell on the ball. And then later that drive, he had a screen pass in the red zone where he would have scored had he not tripped himself and fallen and fumbled out of bounds.
They're in the mix, though. This AFC kind of 6-spot wild card, whatever it is, it's wide open.
So you're going to make me say it?
What?
That the Colts kicker is a problem and he's all name, no game at this point? Mm. I mean, let's
did hit a game winner last week.
They've gone out of their way.
Yarders,
right.
But he's become a liability, a guy that I don't know if it's a little bit of yips that could catch you at any year, apparently. But the way he missed by about 25 yards.
I think he missed
left.
He hit it on the wrong end of his foot. It looked like he kicked it off more.
And he kicked
more
the laces.
The
and there's a lot of things you could say that Adam Vinatieri kind of got boned on that play. But I also have to say, do you trust him at this point? And if you're the Colts,
that would be strong.
Every game you play is a 3-point game. It seems you need a kicker you can trust.
There was a
go get Kai.
There was a play right before halftime.
That's your thing, though. The Colts would probably rather not have Kai over.
I'm just throwing that's an option.
There was a play right before halftime that really came back to haunt the Colts. They were up 16-10. There wasn't enough time, really, for a field goal. Mason Rudolph hits Vance McDonald at midfield. Darius Leonard, helmet-to-helmet hit, gives them 15 yards on an untimed down, and Boswell nailed a 51-yard field goal. Those 3 points ended up being valuable.
Mm. I like that.
There was one little Steelers nugget that came out early Sunday. The fact that they were in the race to trade for Le'Veon Bell. I thought, had that ever happened, that would be one of the weirdest player exit and then return to teams I can imagine or remember in my entire life.
Well, that would seem to tell us that James Conner might be out multiple weeks.
I think that's what they thought, but then the prognosis was a little bit better on Conner. So.
Also, I imagine if they just would have been willing to part with a third-round pick, they probably could have gotten Le'Veon.
Le'Veon Bell, re-sign Antonio Brown. You got to bring the whole...
Well, it shows that Bell was never a problem as a teammate. And they were always trying to give him that contract that the Jets essentially gave him. It took a year off for him to take the contract.
All right, let's head to the NFL cemetery. It's a dirt nap game.
Under center is Wentz. Howard behind him. On first down, it is a handoff. Howard up the middle. 5 into the touchdown. Jordan Howard, 13-yard run.
That's how you clear an alley. That is an alley right down the middle of that defense created by this offensive line. He runs in for the touchdown.
Merrill Reese and Mike Quick, WIP. Oh, yeah. Turn this up. Turn this up in my ears.
Show that pit stain. It's like a network cop drama from 71.
Carson Wentz threw for 239 yards and a score. Jordan Howard, 82 yards and a score. Eagles, 22-14 win over the Bears. I mean, what can be said about Mitch Trubisky? The Mitch Trubisky-led Bears offense, 9 yards in the first half. They get 2 touchdowns in the second half to make it a game. But, Greg, we locked up the Eagles. And it wasn't so much due to our belief in Doug Peterson's topsy-turvy team, but more because the Bears, they actually stank. We did it.
They're bad. And we were smart to do that. Yes. They are totally lost.
Sorry, Tanton behind the glass, filling in on the video side. Big Bears fan. Sorry, buddy.
He is not a rose-colored glasses Chicago.
No, he's not, because he watches. I mean, in the first 5 drives, they had negative 10 yards. And so the running game's broken. Trubisky's broken, where the Eagles just dared Trubisky to beat him. They're playing press man coverage. They're having one safety back, and they're sometimes throwing those zero blitzes at him, and they're saying, can you beat us? Can you beat us with a throw? And his eyes are going down right away. Right when he sees pressure, they go down and he holds it. And then he does the Trubisky thing in the second half where he makes the few little believers left think he's got something, makes some nice throws. They get a couple of touchdowns. But in the end, the defense is a little part of the problem here too. They give up an 8-minute, 14-second, 16-play drive in the fourth quarter when it matters. And credit Doug Peterson for some good play calls, Carson Wentz, and especially Zach Ertz for coming through throughout. But this Bears defense isn't as good as it used to be. They lost Akeem Hicks a few weeks ago. They lost Eddie Goldman today. And they've been run over by a few teams. The Raiders did it and the Eagles did it in the first quarter today. And that's why I don't like hearing, well, it's Trubisky, they're tired. It's like, no, this is three games out of four where the Bears have been run over by an opposing rushing team in the first half of game.
Well, I would throw this out too, though, because it's symbiotic. Because if you have Mitch Trubisky as your quarterback and your first five or six drives go for about 15 total
Absolutely.
Plays and for 8 total minutes. Well, the Eagles turn around. You mentioned their last drive. Their first two drives were 24 total plays that ate up 14 minutes, and then their third was a touchdown drive. And your defense is going to get tired because they are, even though they are the vaunted Bears defense of a year ago, they are human beings. And to be out there, you're getting gassed, and you're out there for 20-plus minutes of the
right.
first half against a team in the Eagles that is getting a little bit better on the ground.
This is who the Eagles are. They held the ball for 40 minutes. They are a ball control team, good and bad. They do not make explosive plays. DeSean Jackson returned and said he didn't feel right after an early catch, and they decided to put him on the sideline for the rest of the game.
Yikes.
And the Eagles would have won easier if Alshon Jeffrey hadn't dropped three different third Oof. Down catches that killed drives. But this is kind of who they are. They have to work a little harder. They're a running team. And because of that, sometimes the game comes down to the fourth quarter, even when you totally dominate the opponent like today.
And even in the second half, it wasn't like the Bears offense, you know, blew up. They had 155 yards, averaged 7 yards a play. The offense is the major glaring issue here. But, you know, on the game-icing field goal by the Eagles on third down, the Eagles were able to go 4 or 5. The Bears couldn't get the stop. Maybe the Bears team of last year gets that stop and somehow they go down the field and steal the game they needed. But instead, they've lost 4 in a row. And we talked about it going into this game, why it was so important, why we're in the cemetery. I don't know if you guys agree with me. Why,
I'm with you.
Why we should say it's time for a dirt nap for the Bears, because they are fading. They were 12th place in the conference entering this game, and they're not moving up after this week. So something magical has to happen.
What's
at
to
this
like?
Point.
They have no one to turn to at quarterback, and they have a defense that can't carry a quarterbackless offense.
Right, and me talking about the defense is just pointing out they're not a historic defense. They're just one of those good top 7 or 8 defenses, and that's not enough in 2019. I think we could see Chase Daniel. I think it's at that level that we could see Chase Daniel.
Oh, bueno.
Because I think that gives him a better chance.
What if it's only for
win.
A game or two to let Mitch Trubisky calm down and you know, come out from under the microscope for a little bit?
Right. I mean, Chicago, you know, and understandably that fan base was thinking NFC title game if things go right and we have a chance at the Super Bowl. You have a very potentially shaky, active offseason coming up, depending on how they self-scout their offense specifically. But this is that time of year where if you're Matt Nagy's family, like, dad is starting to walk around the house in a bad mood, and you're going to have to monitor that. Well, I mean, you know, it's
in
September
and
in October, there's still hope. But I think this was a decisive turn into darkness, and Dan's calling it death. So, I mean, that's
sideline demeanor.
Well, not the people, but the
experience
No coach looks more miserable, I would say, on the sideline right now than Nagy. He just looks sad. And I did
watch a Jet game.
Well, today produced a few, but
Gase is up there. But I would say with the Eagles, they're getting to their bye week at 5-4. It's been rocky. But one thing I thought watching this game was that they're closer to the team they expected to be now, because they had their top three cornerbacks all playing: Avante Maddox, Jalen Mills, and Ronald Darby. None of those guys were there 3 weeks ago. Timmy Jernigan is back. They trade for Jannard Avery, who barely played for them, but he got a sack in a few snaps. So it's a little different team. You maybe get Jason Peters back. They really stymied the Bears' pass rush, including Khalil Mack. So
nice use of stymie.
They're doing a good job.
Good stymie.
All right, guys, you know what time it is.
Stymie, right?
One of our favorite parts of the Sunday experience. It is time now for Road to Victory, presented by the United States Marine Corps.
Three receivers to the right side. Fournette in the backfield. Minshew shotgun. One tight end lined up left. That's DeValve. Minshew on third and eight from the Houston 49. Gets the snap. Has time. Fires downfield. It's picked off by Adai. Jahlil Adai with the pick at the 32-yard line. He's brought down there by Cole. And the Texans take it away.
Mark Vandermeer.
Wow, that was an aggressive run.
And Andre Ware of KILT with the call. No J.J. Watt. No problem for the Texans defense, which forced Gardner Minshew into four turnovers in the final four possessions of the game. A 26-3 win at Wembley Stadium for Houston closes out the 2019 London series for the NFL. Well done, UK. The Houston defense added three sacks and allowed most of Jacksonville's yardage in garbage time. So the Texans hit their bye week. They're back in sole possession of first place in the AFC South. And this game, to me, really illuminated two things. They're not all J.J. Watt on defense. They can turn it up if they have to. And also how the advantage at quarterback, Deshaun Watson, is so much better than the other quarterbacks in the division. That's why I think they're going to end up winning this division in a walk.
I think there's a really noticeable contrast in third downs in this game. They didn't look like two totally uneven teams, but the Texans are doing these run-pass options on third downs. And when the initial play, when he chooses pass, isn't there, Watson just finds a way to make a play, and there's no defense against that. Whereas Minshew was a little more tentative in this game, and more importantly, was always in a third and long. They kept running, and they kept failing on early downs. And I saw a stat. There was one third and four, and then every other third and long was third and six or more, a lot of them third and ten or more. And he wasn't willing to pull the trigger quite as much today and wasn't comfortable with what he was seeing. And I think you give a veteran defensive coordinator and Romeo Crennel some credit for that, because he seemed to have Minshew spooked.
Right. The Texans, without J.J. Watt, arguably this was their finest defensive outing of the year. And I think they pushed Gardner Minshew into a scenario late where he was forced to try to make plays when they were in a hot water.
Like a rookie. It happens.
He looks like a rookie, but yeah. but what I don't want to delve into is, and I think that we are getting there, where when Bill O'Brien says after the game he's going to decide by next, you know, during the bye week, who's going to start a quarterback.
Doug Marrone.
That it's probably going to be Foles at this point.
Well, let's listen to what Marrone had to say after the game when asked about it, because Nick Foles, of course, who exited week one with a clavicle injury, should be ready after the bye. And Marrone left the door open.
Well, Gene, you know, I haven't spoken to either quarterback yet. And I hate, you know, talking to the media with my plans. But, you know, my plans were, again, the disappointment of the team, you know, not performing well will be on my mind now for the next 48 hours. I think after those 48 hours are over, I'm going to step away a little bit and take a break, because I don't have to make a decision or have time. That's what I'm going to talk to the quarterbacks about. And then I'll tell them probably right before we come back on Sunday, we'll be able to discuss where we're going to go. That's pretty much my plan.
That sounds like Foles is playing.
Just one quick thing, and then you guys can go where you want with it. But like, I think with Foles, like, it's an organizational thing. You have to see Foles, and Greg and I were talking about this morning, because of what you've invested already. But the idea that Gardner Minshew has played himself out of the job because of today, for instance, he's outplayed a flock of first-round, first- and second-year quarterbacks that aren't doing anything close to what he's done at this time. He's been fantastic. He's been
a
rookie
nice job.
Of the year material that I think is not viewed fairly because he's a bit of a media sensation at the same time.
I could understand the decision either way with this one. I don't think this one needs any hot takes. Like, if they go with Foles, that's fine. If they go with Minshew, that's fine too.
I agree, and maybe we'll get into it during the week. But the reason why I'm not surprised they would go with Foles is this Jaguars defense isn't special anymore. It's fine. You know, they have three pass rushers. That's pretty good. But other than that, what are they doing?
I mean, Carlos Hyde makes every defense look bad.
I guess so.
Do you remember him having a second gear like that?
No. And so
you got to move that ball to the other hand by the sideline, by the way. Get in the end zone, Carlos.
If their defense is just okay, the O-line is definitely not great, and maybe that'll hurt Nick Foles if he comes in. Minshew's done a good job kind of coping with that. who's got the higher ceiling? And I don't think you can discount the ceiling that we've seen out of Nick Foles either, that his best, and we saw it in this, you know, as one of the great Super Bowl performances ever, but a really great stretch run last year too, is pretty high. And I think you want to see him, because if you don't see him, then you're just moving on from him after this season.
That's fair.
And I think Minshew's going to be there for 4 years, and it wouldn't surprise me if we see Foles and then Minshew's their quarterback next year.
It's just a unique situation.
And it feels like 100 years ago, but there was a time when Nick Foles was a young quarterback that was fairly unheralded, and he had 27 touchdowns and two interceptions or whatever it is. And this was kind of framed as his first like real crack at leading a franchise. It makes sense to me. I don't think it's going to be a popular decision if it goes down the way it seems to with the with the fans, because we've got like that stadium, for instance, that's essentially a home game. Well, it was literally a home game for the Jaguars, but also a lot of Jaguars fans in the UK. Everyone with their number 15 jerseys that they spent $60 on, and they have the mustaches on. He has captured the imagination of that fan base. I would imagine there's going to be some pushback if they move away, but they do have a head coach in Marone. He is like Bill O'Brien. He doesn't care. He's not going to factor in what the fans think, nor should he. But it seems I would be surprised.
He's trying
if it's
to
not
save his thing. Job. He also, yeah, that's true. But he does have to factor in what the locker room thinks. I would imagine he also seems like a coach that might not care about that either, based on past Doug Marone experiences.
The Texans have swept the Jags. I mean, this was a big win just in the AFC South race.
Yes, let us move on. But before we do, that was the road to victory, presented by the United States Marine Corps. All right, let's move on to one of the more puzzling results of Sunday's football action.
I formation, Rivers under center, Derek Watt, Melvin Gordon, seven offensive linemen.
Hey,
Rivers,
it's money.
On a fourth and goal, hands to Gordon, pushes into the end zone, touchdown, Chargers. Melvin Gordon with his second one-yard dive of the game.
Chargers have found a running game. Melvin Gordon, short yardage, no problem. Drop your pads and power right through.
Drop the audio. Once Money finished his input highlight, we do not need the other guy in the booth.
Who?
Daniel Jeremiah. Don't need him. I'm going to put that on Matt Tatton. He's filling in for some ill people.
He doesn't know your feelings about
We have a rule,
sticks.
A hard and fast rule. No Daniel Jeremiah on this show.
I don't know about
well,
we.
I do.
Yeah, I would say we is stretching it, so that's okay.
Anyway.
This thing has really had staying power.
Wes is a fan.
I like it by now.
Melvin Gordon scored twice from 1 yard out, including that plunge in the second half. And Michael Badgley, good for you, Mike Badgley. Four field goals. The Chargers dominate the Packers 26-11 at the Big Dignity. What do you think about that?
The Big Dignity?
Yeah.
I like it.
I was also thinking about it at the
that
big,
works.
At the Big Healthy.
Oh, I like Big Healthy.
Yeah. Super Healthy? The Super Healthy?
No, Big Healthy.
Big Healthy?
Big Healthy.
Big Dignity, though. That's kind of interesting, too.
Yeah, it's tricky.
All
I
right,
think Big Healthy.
Let's workshop
works.
That one. Anyway, it stops a three-game losing streak for the Chargers. Wes, we have to know, though, what the hell happened to Aaron Rodgers and the Packers' offense in this one?
This was a hammer drop. Just an absolute
what?
Hammer drop of a game. And to me, says more about the Chargers and what they are now as opposed to a couple weeks ago versus what it says about the Packers. I think you have a healthy Melvin Ingram, which you didn't have a few weeks ago. Melvin Gordon looked more explosive, elusive, and decisive today than he has at any point this year by far. He just looked like a different player. Russell Okung's back. Hunter Henry is playing really well. All these guys who weren't playing or playing poorly for the Chargers have transformed this team. This looked like a totally different team. It was one of Phillip Rivers' best games of the year, his ball placement, his ability to get rid of the ball really quickly. And then Joey Bosa, I mean, I guess he could be battling his brother for an all-pro berth. He's having just as good of a year as Nick Bosa, and he lived in the Packers' backfield in this game. You don't often hear a head coach after the game say, we never even had a chance to get into our game plan. And that's what Matt LaFleur said. It seemed like every third down, the Packers couldn't convert, so they never had the ball. And one of the Jim Nance nuggets in this game was this.
Nance Nug?
He had a couple good ones, but this was the first time an Aaron Rodgers-led offense did not top 100 yards by the end of the third quarter.
Wow. Yeah, it was It was 329-60 in yards late in the third quarter. That is the most surprising yardage total, and this is right up there with the most surprising games to me of the entire NFL season.
I agree.
Just in terms of the dominance, because the Chargers hadn't shown us anything like this all year.
I don't think you'll watch this game and say, oh, you know, the Chargers are flying around and really hitting people hard and swarming everything. The Packers just couldn't get anything accomplished on third downs. Mm.
And I imagine that Bill at the Big Health or the Big Healthy or the Big Dignity, that had to be filled with cheeseheads.
It was.
And that didn't matter, obviously, because the Packers couldn't do a damn thing.
Yeah, I just had a vision of one of the cheeseheads who was shirtless with suspenders and some goofy hat at the end of the game just looking miserable.
I get it. Probably shelled out a lot of money.
Yeah.
The Packers defense, at least defending the run, is a problem. I know Gordon, he did look better, I think, in his touchdown run last week, too, and I'm sure he did today. But they're kind of that team that if you've got a running game problem, face the Packers, and they'll solve it for you. I mean, every week it's like that. The Chargers hadn't topped 40 yards, you know, since week four on the ground, and they put 159 on the Packers. And I don't know. I guess they should fire Ken Wisenhunt more often. You know, it's like
seemed to work.
It worked great. I take back what I said.
I mean, they're not the first team to go down that avenue.
Just call them up
change,
again tonight.
Do it again.
As long as you keep paying them.
I thought they looked more in sync. I mean, it's hard to pay attention too much to play calling during a game, but they looked more in sync, and one of the beat writers said they were getting the plays in a lot quicker and allowing Rivers to make quicker decisions at the line of scrimmage.
Just so baffling because we just finished talking about, you know, this great Packers stretch that they've been on before the loss today and how they've been able to turn Aaron Jones into this dual-threat superstar. Well, he doesn't do anything. And then Davante Adams had missed all that time. Then he comes back, and he's the most targeted receiver, but it's in their worst offensive performance in 6 weeks. So sometimes, you know, this is good. This is a good thing about sports, though. Sometimes it's good to have these, like, screwball things that just let everybody know you don't really know anything and anything could happen. Any given Sunday is a term I've come up with. On any
okay,
given
like
Sunday, something can change the way you look at
things. Talk to the NFL about that.
You should trademark that like Michael Badgley trademarked Money Badger.
Oh,
well,
yeah.
What about even crazier? Up in New England, they're using Quiet Storm for Stephon Gilmore, which does not sit well.
Well, they had a Quiet Storm a year ago in a different player, and so they've now gone down the road with two.
It was Trey Flowers.
Trey Flowers was Quiet Storm.
This is our IP.
It's shocking to me that the Patriots are not respecting our podcast. That's something I'm struggling to process.
Or aren't respecting others, period.
Should I get back on the Chargers bandwagon?
Yeah, go ahead.
Here, Wes?
Really?
Go ahead. Get
I'm just saying, they're 4-5, and like we said, of all the teams where there are a lot of teams like this every year, where you can just like throw out the first half of the year, do they have people on their roster that could make you believe and they go on a second half run? Sure.
I believe that, and you will have their starting safeties ostensibly will come back at some point, Derwin James and Adrian Phillips. And that would be, to me, the final pieces on that defense. You saw a transformed defense today. Joey Bosa is really playing as well as Nick Bosa, I think.
It's only like twice in our lives where brothers in the same league at the same time are this dominant. I would allow them both into the Pro Bowl as one entity, and one plays the first half, one plays the second, or to be a double All-Pro vote, because it's like, let's be rules associated and rules dominant, but like it's going to happen never again in our life.
What about a double DPOY? Have the brothers share the big award.
I liked it.
I mean, that's when you have children, you hope this is what happens with your children, where you hit, you know, late 50s or something, both your children are raging income-earning professionals, and you just sit back in, like, expensive rocking chairs.
You know what this game reminded me? Remember our old fork segment?
Yeah, of course.
This reminded me of Greg would always argue never to fork anyone because they could, you know, come alive. This was a team that we may have forked or come close to forking, and they look like they could slide into a sixth seed.
Yep, I agree. And one last thing before we move on, Wes. Anything to be concerned about with the Packers here or just a bad day?
I would chalk it up to a speed bump. I think Greg's right that their defense has not been the last month what it was the first month. So that's an issue. But I chalk it up to things just did not go their way. These third down bombs that Rodgers has been throwing and people have been making great catches, he's been putting right on people's hands, they didn't complete any of those today. So, I mean, some of that is just randomness, but they got thoroughly outplayed, and I think it was one of those games where you just shake it off and bounce back.
You
next
can't
week.
Just roll into Big Healthy and have your way.
Mm-mm.
That's something that we learned today.
Mm-mm. You'll lose your
only day. Three more left in the Big Health. What is it? The Big Dignity.
I don't know.
Big Dignity.
The Little Dignity.
Three more forever.
All right.
Mark, you went to the first game there.
I did. What a celebration.
You should go to the last game. That's going to button it up.
I get goosebumps thinking about Mark's trip to the Big Dignity.
Another article of mine that I'm certain you've not read.
Let's move on. You wrote an article about it?
That's here's cool. your fourth
Get out
down.
Of here.
Here's
Go
your
home.
Thing. Play action. And Stafford fires back of the end zone. Incomplete. Incomplete. Incomplete.
3 seconds left.
Easy,
Earl
Brett.
Joseph made a great
an older man.
Not falling for the fake. Responded. I've been critical of his coverage all season, but he did a magnificent job on that last play.
How magnanimous of Lincoln Kennedy and his partner, Brent Musburger of KGMZ. I have to say, I love hearing Brent Musburger's voice. I know he had the issue with the Alabama quarterback a few years back. Caught some heat for that. I was like, oh, she's quite a looker.
AJ McCarron Catherine
Webb.
He's
had some issues on social media, but yeah.
And he maybe went a little too hard into the Vegas thing. He's like, I love gambling. That was a little weird when he did that. But you know what?
Well, he owns a gambling company, so he's still very much in that. Yeah.
But you know what? He sounds like...
Greg has no issues with that part of him, by the way. That's fine.
Go make your money, Brent.
He sounds like childhood to me, and I'm sure you guys
It's just collective memory. It's not recent experiences with the man, per se.
Carl Joseph broke up a fourth down Matthew Stafford pass in the end zone with 3 seconds to play, giving the Raiders, a 31-24 win over the Lions. This is the first game played at the Black Hole in 7 weeks, and Derek Carr put the Raiders ahead with 2 minutes to play on a touchdown pass to Hunter Renfro, who's slowly getting out of Greg Rosenthal's unfair doghouse. Greg, the Raiders, you know, they're fun, and so is this game.
It was the game of the day. Disrespectful to put it so far down in the order, but I get it.
It's all in the middle.
It's all these AFC West teams in a row. You know, people say, oh, the NFC is way better. Well, it is. But today, Matt Moore, the backup of the Chiefs, they take out the Vikings. The Packers can't get even close against the Chargers. And here's Oakland beating an NFC team, the Lions. And I think you got to start with Derek Carr and the offensive line. The combination of those two factors have made this team very watchable. He got sacked today for the first time since week 4.
Whoa.
That's outrageous. They were missing their starting center, Rodney Hudson, and then they lost Trent Brown, their right tackle, early in the game. So that's big-time concern later in the season. But you didn't notice it today. And I think no quarterback is more different when he has pressure on him than when he's well-protected than Derek Carr. Because when he's protected like he has been this season, especially today, he makes some pretty throws, and he made a number of them today. It was back and forth, and it was a lot of fun to watch.
Are there some people out there who might owe Tom Cable an apology? The offensive line.
I mean, he owes a lot of people apologies.
I mean, I'm fine that we.
Even Steven.
I'm fine that I picked on how poor his offensive line produced year after year after year. But he's done a great job.
He's been everybody's whipping boy on Twitter because he can't coach offensive line, according to Twitter. But this offensive line is doing really well.
It is. And because of that, Carr's had time to look, and there was a 3rd-and-11 throw to Tyrell Williams that kept a touchdown drive going that was just outrageous. Their game-winning touchdown drive was all to Jalen Richard for a while, and then it's to Renfro for the game winner where Carr has to make a play late in the down. John Gruden's having fun calling plays, and he's doing a great job doing it, and he didn't face that much opposition here with Detroit. I mean, I was surprised this game didn't go to overtime because neither defense could get any pressure. And neither defense is very good. And I just figured this is 31-31 overtime.
I think the apologies might extend to John Gruden as well, who I know I've had fun at his expense multiple times.
I'll throw my hat in that.
But you mentioned the defense, and that's my concern with Oakland's overall journey here, is that you're giving up 400 yards passing. The pass rush isn't there. It just feels like a fatal flaw, potentially.
I don't think any of us agree that they're, you know, a special team or a playoff darling.
No, but they're in the mix.
They're
an
entertaining team that's going to play some back and forth, some high-scoring games. And one guy I want to point out, because we talked about it, Wes, you got on me a little bit because I see Kyler Murray as a potential offensive player of the year still for rookies, and you threw out Gardner Minshew as a guy that you guys would get behind. I think Josh Jacobs has got to be the guy. I mean, right now, what he's doing on a weekly basis for this team, he is a bell cow back. He's 21 years old, and he runs – like a madman, 28 for 120 and two touchdowns. And this is just something every week they can count on Jacobs giving them good yardage and helping the offense stay functional.
Yeah, I get more impressed with him every week. He just seems to get better and better.
I'm the same. I thought this was his best game. There were a lot of plays that should have been negative yardage where he ends up getting 2, 3, 4. He's got that jump cut. He's running more decisively. I think you're right.
Well, the
and
way
I think he's the offensive.
I'm right that I was wrong.
I have no problem with that. But if it's all things being equal, the degree of difficulty to come in as a rookie quarterback
absolutely
is something that I think wins that award over and over for those guys.
Yeah, it does. If Minshew gets banned, who knows? It doesn't even that part of it doesn't matter. I just am impressed of how much this guy has changed this team in Josh Jacobs.
And it's good for them to nail some draft picks. I mean, they have some young players.
They have a really good rookie class.
Right. That was important, though.
I mean,
because
you're talking about their pass rush. They maybe didn't nail the first pick. It's still very early, obviously.
Right.
But on balance, this, yes,
well,
looks
they
like
lost
an excellent draft.
Rookie safety, who I think would have made a big difference in this defense, too.
Mm. Didn't rookie score all four of their touchdowns in this game, I believe.
Yeah. Fabian Moreau had another big touchdown. This team is really interesting because you're right. I don't think they have any chance to win a Super Bowl or probably even the AFC Championship game. But to me, football seasons are like that. You know, you can get value out of teams that win 10 games. They have two more games here in the black hole in a row. Chargers on Thursday night, which is a spicy Thursday night football suddenly because they both need that win. Then the Bengals at the black hole. Then the Jets. You know, if they can put together these wins at home in their final season of Oakland and sneak into a playoff spot, that's going to be like a magical moment, and it would be a nice way to send that crowd out.
Mm, I like it. All right, let us move on to the team of Sestiel. And I'll talk about
second
the team that won this game.
Six, play action fake. Josh Allen fires into the end zone. Caught by Beasley. Touchdown, Buffalo. Cole Beasley. 3 touchdowns in 3 straight games for him. And the Bills strike first with a 6-yard pass from Josh Allen.
Cole Beasley jumps up in the stands now, being harassed by Bills fans. Incredible sight to see. This was an incredible route on the outside by Cole Beasley.
So incredible. John Murphy, Eric Wood, WGR with the call. Yes, Josh Allen and Cole Beasley. All the Allen quarterbacks won Sunday. Josh, Kyle, Brandon.
That's only happened 5 other times in NFL history.
It's incredible. I have a close cousin of mine is Mike Allen, his brothers Eric and Stu, the father. I texted them. I said, guys, big day, big Sunday.
Big day for Stu Allen.
All right, Josh Allen and Cole Beasley connected for a second straight week, and rookie Devin Singletary had 95 yards rushing, including a 2-yard score. The Bills coast 24-9 over Washington in Western New York. Mark, we asked the Bills to land a hammer on a bad Washington team. Did this qualify?
No, I don't think it would qualify at all as a hammering. The game played to expectations in the sense that, you know, you mentioned my favorite team, the team of Mark Teal, did you call
Sestiel.
It? Sestiel. That is because I love what the Redskins essentially have committed themselves to, and we'll get to the team that won this in a second, but Washington, 3 games in a row, is, I think they're basically saying, we are not going to be, even if we are flying home, we are not going to miss 60 minutes tonight. We are not going to miss anything about what normally would happen from 4 p.m.
Your
on
Sunday.
Your
favorite game, yes or no, is a non-competitive game that ends quickly. That's football.
That is what I like when I am covering. No, I thought this would be my second game at the 10 a.m. slot on the West Coast, and it was the only game I was covering. It did not quite check all the boxes from that angle, but it finished in about 2 hours and 40-something minutes. 2 weeks ago,
it's incredible.
They set the fastest game record in over a decade with a 2-hour, 36 game affair, and then they had a game couched in between that was very similar, and it's because they are committed to essentially basing an offense around Adrian Peterson, who, you know, a lot of people wrote him off. He looked great today. He looked really, he had 100 yards plus in the first half. You had Dwayne Haskins as your rookie starter, and I think they really were just, that's frustrating because I think even for Dwayne Haskins, they seemed, it's hard to get a read on a quarterback in an offense that has about 10 plays in their playbook, and they aren't really letting him just sort of go for it and wing it.
That'll hurt you in the NFL.
I like his arm, but you're right. It will hurt you because this is the least creative offensive attack that I've maybe ever seen. But they're committed to it, and I appreciate that.
And like Bill Callahan, he replaced a Gruden brother. So you would imagine there's a playbook in there somewhere that has some plays.
It's all about the running game. But that's what he's known for.
It's not the personnel that they don't trust, right?
They use page A of the running attack part of the playbook, I think, and they're just the Bills, to me, my one concern is a lack of ability to close certain games. They, in the second half of this thing, got shut down in the red zone. Gore has struggled today. And the one thing that I took away from the Bills is they seem now committed down the stretch to use Devin Singletary, who led the team with 20 carries, as someone that they're going to lean on more and more. And he's not perfect, but he is more explosive than anyone else they have at running back
right now.
Should
we head back to NFL Cemetery and take Frank Gore with us?
Oh, no.
You're
having a great season.
Frank Gore was stuffed on you know, first, second, third, fourth, and short three or four times in this game. One on an early third quarter drive that just ended in downs because Gore was stuffed. And it was just not a great look for him. And the Bills should have won this game. They should have been up by three-plus touchdowns at various points, and it was like 17-9. It was a one-score game for way too long because they just don't have the parts in place to put people away the way you asked, if that's what they did.
The yards were even. You know,
it looked that way, too.
Haskins, they didn't have a wide receiver catch a pass over 13 yards. But you look at the stats, and it's like, well, he averaged 7 yards per attempt. It wasn't a total disaster.
The Bills are 6-0 against teams below 500, 0-2 against teams above 500. Three of the Bills' remaining 8 games are against teams currently above 500. So, again, we've been saying this, that if they just play to this how they've been doing so far, just beat bad teams, and maybe you don't beat the good teams, you go 11-5.
They're going 11-5, barring...
And then we'll see you quickly out of the playoff tournament. But again, who knows? You never know.
It's some of these other AFC teams we've talked about.
Look at the Chargers today. You never know what happens. You get the Bills in January. You get that defense hyped up in a cold weather game.
I see a little Brian Westbrook and Devin Singletary. Remember him? Eagles?
Yeah, absolutely. I can see that.
Let's move on. I see it too, Wes.
Thank you, Dan.
Double really tight, shifty, both on the right, back. Shoulder to shoulder. McCaffrey right up the middle. Running free, may score to the 40, to the 30, foot race, 20, to the 10-yard line. Yes, sir, he scores a touchdown. Foot speed, I mean, in the open field, just dragging for the last 5 yards, Adoree Jackson into the end zone. 58-yard touchdown run.
The great Mick Mixon of WBT. With the call, CMC for MVP. Christian McCaffrey continued to build on his phenomenal 2019, going off for a 166 and 3 touches. That's 166 yards from scrimmage. Panthers, a 30-20 win over the Titans in Charlotte. West, the Panthers were embarrassed by the Niners a week ago. You always want to follow the bury the ball game with a get right game, and that's what happened today.
So many games.
It's not that complicated.
By the way, Mick Mixon sounds like a competitive barbecue circuit guy.
Oh, yeah.
This was a get right game, I think. I was starting to doubt Kyle Allen big time, and I'm not saying he looked like, you know, the prime of Jake DeLone back there.
Is that a compliment?
Greg, I'm not talking about the decline phase. I'm talking about the prime.
Oh, the
of Jake.
Good Jake.
Hey, how about the guy who lit
Super
up the
Bowl 37?
Jake DeLome. Yeah,
that Jake DeLome. That guy could play.
He made some pretty
Southern
throws.
Southern slinger.
And we've seen in his best starts, he's got some nice touch and ball placement, and he had that today. And then Christian McCaffrey just took over. But this was also the Titans never had the ball. It was 17-0, and at that point, the Panthers had run 41 plays. The Titans had run only 14. Deion Lewis, who has really given the Titans very little this year, fumbled. A.J. Brown dropped a pass that turned into an easy interception.
Oof.
And those two plays really broke the back of the Titans in the first half and never gave them a chance to stay in this game. Mm.
The separation right now in the AFC South is noticeable. The Titans and the Jags now 2 losses behind. That's pretty significant. The Titans are a team that if you look beyond the numbers, kind of at the underlying yards per play, the DVOA, Football Outsiders, pretty much anyone with the advanced metrics, say that they were a much worse team than a 4-4 team, that they're closer to the 23rd, 24th best team in the league. And I thought this was a good test. Two teams that should be pretty even. You got Kyle Allen starting for Carolina, and it's not that close.
Well, they're not even because of Christian McCaffrey, I think. He's he's just the best player in this game by far. And then I think Titans fans have the pitchforks and torches out for the offensive coordinator, first-year guy Arthur Smith. They've really done – they have no identity on offense. They haven't done much. And I don't know how much of that is just that the offensive line – they changed quarterbacks, and the offensive line is still a mess.
You're going to come after Art because he's working with Mariota and Tannehill. All right.
I mean, they've changed offensive coordinators almost every year.
He might be the Mariota of coordinators.
That's certainly possible. I want to point two things out about McCaffrey to put this into some, you know, historic, you know, looking at this historically. So the only way you can win MVP as a running back is you have to have a historic season. And McCaffrey joins Jim Brown, your boy, Mark, in 1963 as the only players in NFL history with 150-plus yards from scrimmage and one at least one scrimmage touchdown in 6 of 8 games. And now this for the guys that built Roto-World brick by brick.
That was Greg.
Greg Wess. Listen to this. What is the greatest fantasy season in the history of mankind? This century.
I would guess LaDainian Tomlinson's like 30 touchdown season.
Yes, 2006. He had 483 points for the Chargers.
Nailed it.
Unbelievable. McCaffrey on pace for 493 points. He's on pace to have the greatest fantasy season of all time. Now, what does that mean? Maybe nothing to the people in this room. You guys have moved on. You look at you believe yourself to be above fantasy.
That's not true.
But for the 500 million people that play fantasy, what he's doing has never been done before. And that's how you win MVP. You have a season for the ages at running back.
I think if they took a vote today, he would come in second place to Russell Wilson. I changed my mind. But I think that's how the voters would go, that he would have a significant amount of support. Watson would have some, and I think Wilson would have
Rodgers
so far.
Even with today's tough game, he's got to be in the conversation.
I think he probably dropped to like fourth or fifth after today.
I mean, also, if you're voting on this stuff, you're probably not necessarily watching coaches tape on every player in the league week after week.
Right.
And so the Christian McCaffrey experience is that every week he does two or three things that look like nothing else we've ever seen from a running back in the NFL.
Oh, we got the return of Riverboat today.
Mm. Oh, good.
Goes for fourth and two, and it ended up a 7-yard touchdown to McCaffrey, and then had a fake punt late in the game to cut the Titans off guard.
That's good, because Riverboat certainly took the Niners game off.
Oh, ouch.
Riverboat's had a nice little run here. 0-2 and staring at getting fired. They're what are they now with Kyle Allen? 5-1?
He's always staring at getting fired.
It's pretty wild.
Mark, got to head back to the cemetery.
Okay.
Blitz on the way. Mayfield in the pocket. Throws the crossing route. It's dropped at the 20. Landry had it in his hands. And then the collision with Devontae Harris. He couldn't hang on. Kareem Jackson there as well. And the Denver defense makes a huge stop with 3:19 left.
Man, they needed that. Oh.
Dave Logan and Rick Lewis of KOA with the call. Yes, that Broncos defense throttled Baker Mayfield and friends all afternoon, forcing the Browns to settle for 4 field goals, all when they were in close to the end zone, and 2 stops on 4th down, including one that I know Mark is going to want to talk about. 24-19 is the final. The Broncos beat the Browns at Mile High. Mark, we called this a potential dirt nap game for the Browns, and then you let Brandon Allen and the Broncos get you. Summon the Undertaker.
Yeah, I think that the Browns' season has been one of, if you're a bit of a snake bit Cleveland fan of a certain age, you go into each of these weeks with the hope factor diminishing and being chipped away, and you start to, during the course of the week, imagine the worst-case scenario, and it seems to be coming true week after week, where Brandon Allen was the quarterback in this game, who got a ton of help in terms of yards after the catch, but also made some money throws. I mean, he also at times looked completely out of place, but he did not throw an interception. He did not completely unspool Denver's offense against a Browns defense that I thought did not show up today when they needed the most to. And on offense, you mentioned it, they drove down Baker Mayfield and the Browns to Denver's 21-yard line, to their 12 twice, to their 9, and to their 5, came away with 12 points off of that. And the play that you're mentioning is a critical 4th down conversion attempt where Baker Mayfield, with Nick Chubb off the field, wiggled around center to essentially try a quarterback sneak. I thought from every replay angle, it looked to me like he got it. And widely, it was the broadcasters felt the same way, and they were not rewarded the first down. And I think the game essentially
they challenged it, and they did not get.
They challenged it, and Freddie Kitchens, who has been under a ton of fire in general, obviously for what's happened this season, his record with these challenges is becoming something anti-historic. So it is a rough loss for Cleveland, but a lot of credit to Denver because I thought they had a whole different energy with Brandon Allen in there. And they needed a bit of a change at quarterback. We know that. But guys like Noah Fant showed up for the first time all season. Philip Lindsay played a great game too. It doesn't quite look that way if you look at his box score. But, I mean, he was fantastic down the stretch. And they won a game against a team that I'm not sure you can look at Cleveland's schedule and say it's so easy from here on out. It's easy to play the Browns right now. They shoot themselves in the foot, can't close drives, and seem to have a different part of the team not show up on a weekly basis.
Hmm. Seemed like Odell Beckham was frustrated after the game. I know at one point James Palmer said that he came off the field and basically expressed, it doesn't matter what I do, I can't get the ball thrown to me.
That was on that 4th-and-4 play late.
Yeah, I think that they, during the week, you know, Odell Beckham talked about the fact that he and Baker Mayfield never really developed that chemistry prior to week one, and it hasn't shown up. And they mentioned during the game that Odell Beckham basically wants the quarterback to throw it to him in traffic and give him a chance to do what he does, and that's not happening. They have been out of sync from wire to wire. And it's I can't believe it's already November. It just, this has been a bad Brown season, and it's, I'm never listening to another bit of off-season fantasy nonsense ever again about what a team's going to do until it's actually happening. It's all media-conjured BS. I'm
well,
not dealing
Beckham,
with
it anymore. It's on some level not shocking that they're not in sync. They didn't practice at all the entire off-season. Some of that was by choice.
That's week 9.
Some of that was by choice with Beckham, and then the rest was injury, you know, in training camp. They did throw to him 6 times. He caught 5 for 87. That's extremely efficient. If you did that every week, you would love
I mean, isn't this because Baker Mayfield's just not playing well?
He's not playing well.
I think Beckham hasn't come down with a number of 50-50 balls this year. It's probably just 5 or 6, but it just is it's noticeable that he normally does, but it's mostly Baker.
And Beckham is going to be in the news again because this has been the one thing he has found himself in the news with his fashion choices. He wore Joker cleats. Him and Jarvis Landry both wore cleats that are not allowed by the league. And I'm not going to be one of those guys that like, oh, this guy has no respect for the game and he only cares about himself. But as what I imagine is going to happen is he will go out in the media and say how he's being persecuted and stuff. It's just like it is not a great look when you're wearing the Joker cleats and you're 2-6 and you're not making the game-changing plays you're brought to the team to do. It has just been a really bad debut season.
Yes, that's fine. I would say this, that in general, Odell Beckham has, compared to some of the stuff that happened with the New York Giants, not been a problem on this team at all. The issues with the Cleveland Browns extend far beyond fashion choices.
I agree.
But I
just want to say like that, and this room would kill Eli Manning. It was time for Eli to go, but Beckham has gone to Cleveland. He's no longer an exciting player. He makes a play here and there, but he was one of the most exciting players we've seen in 20 years. That, to me, is one of the most shocking things of the 2019 season.
You can't build your offense around a wide receiver.
I agree. I've been very disappointed by that connection, Baker and Odell. Well, I had much higher expectations for them.
It's the Browns' offense is one of the most shocking units in the entire NFL. It's one of the worst 5 or 6 offenses. I wouldn't imagine that in a million years. Even today, where they run 73 plays, they still only get 351 yards out of it. It's like Brandon Allen comes in, they put up 24 points. That matches their season high. They only had 9 drives. Now, it wasn't all perfect, but they hit some big plays. It's just wild.
Last year, their recipe was explosive downfield passing action, and it's all withered away.
I'm going to ask you a question right now on November 3rd, Mark. On January 1st, is Freddie Kitchens the coach of the Browns?
I think he is.
So he'll get a second year.
Just because the organization has made so many changes.
All right, here's a guy who I don't think will get a second year. Let's move on.
Back to throw, Fitzpatrick looking, flips it back, shoulder, caught, touchdown! It's Devontae Parker, what a catch!
He takes the
back shoulder.
He makes the tough catches, the easy ones he drops.
Hey, listen, I'll take that one right there, Bob. That's a touchdown.
All right. He caught that ball one-handed.
Yeah, he did, boy. That was nice.
Jimmy Cephalo and Bob Greasy. WQAM with the call. Ryan Fitzpatrick. Fitzmagic. Three touchdown passes, two of them to rookie Preston Williams. And Miami gets its first win of the season by beating former coach Adam Gase and the New York Jets. Final score 26-18 at Hard Rock Stadium. The Dolphins, who have been, it's been explained to us and speculated based on the moves Miami's made that they are actively attempting to land the number one overall pick, that this is the organic fish tank. Well, they met their match with the Jets, who are just one of those special franchises that somehow are now in the lead over the Dolphins for the number one overall pick. I believe the Jets are currently would pick third and the Dolphins fourth. You give credit to Brian Flores, who's the head coach of the Dolphins, who signed a big contract to take over that team and was handed an absolute disaster scenario, and things could not have started worse. It was still the worst start for any team in recent NFL history, but if you've been tracking them at all, the Dolphins have been getting better week after week after week, and on Monday night, as we remember, against the Steelers, they even had a 14-0 lead. So they had gotten to the point where they weren't just competitive, but they were actively looking like a team that could win a game, and they finished the job against the Jets. The Jets were the perfect opponent because this is an organization both inside and out that's in a free fall right now. And on the first drive, just like last week for the Jets, they go right down the field. They get a touchdown. They're up 7-0. Sam Darnold looks great. And then, and again, this is why Adam Gase, to me, especially now that the fan base is going to be on fire after you lose to the tanking Dolphins, you can't do this week after week and have a bad offense. The Jets have a bad, bad, bad offense. And Adam Gase was hired controversially. People didn't love the hire in a broad sense because they said this guy didn't do it in Miami. However, he had the Peyton Manning seal of approval, and he had some glimmers of success with Ryan Tannehill and so on and so forth, and he would make Sam Darnold better. Sam Darnold is not getting better. Sam Darnold is regressing. So when you factor in the poor play of the team, how they seem unprepared, how they seem listless, the effort isn't there at times, it seems, how they're getting beat every week, how they're getting embarrassed most weeks, and the fact that the golden boy, Sam Darnold, continues to struggle, especially with turnovers. And that was, of course, the connection to Darnold at USC, that he was a talented player that somehow sometimes could get careless. Well, that has really come to the forefront over the last 3 weeks. So add that all up. I think Gase has to go, barring some type of magical shift. And you also have guys like Jamal Adams. We didn't really get into it too much on Thursday's show, but he did tweet out during the Joe Douglas press conference how he felt essentially he was double-crossed, that the team had told him he wasn't on the block, and then they held trade talks. Ian Rappaport had a report on Sunday morning that Zach Martin, the Jets were asking for, Tyron Smith, the Jets were asking for, if they were going to move Jamal Adams to the Cowboys. The Cowboys said no. And Adams now is actively on Twitter putting emojis up like a finish line, a checkered flag. He's giving purposefully vague, running out the clock answers post game. He is looking to get out of town. I don't think it's a great look by him either, but I get it. I get the frustration. The Jets are a mess, but good for the Dolphins. If you're happy. I don't know if Dolphins fans are happy now.
They are happy. The players are happy and the coaching staff's happy. They never were tanking.
That's true.
You know, the organization.
And no one ever said the players
right,
coaches.
Decided to take a step back. Watching Ryan Fitzpatrick walk off the field with his two sons, two of seven, which he says were born in seven different states, which is, I don't know if he was joking or not, but it's certainly possible considering his career.
Kind of a weird joke.
It's one of the most wild stats out there. And he said, this isn't like winning the Super Bowl, but it sure feels sweet in that this season has been a great lesson for my boys, that they're watching this and that they are learning a lot of what it means to be a human, to be in a professional, to take joy in things when it's not, going your way. And I found that's kind of what sports is about sometimes. Like Ryan Fitzpatrick walking off the field with his son, Brian Flores getting the Gatorade bath. I mean, this felt like more than just an 0-7 team winning a game for them.
Fitz is a smart guy. Where did he go to school?
Starting to feel like the plot from Major League.
That would be incredible. And we'll give Adam Gase the final word. He was asked if, you know, this was embarrassing to not just lose to your former team, but to lose to a tanking team that entered action 0-8.
It doesn't matter in the NFL. You got to come out here. You got to play good. You got to play well. You can't have penalties. You can't have missed opportunities. We didn't play well enough.
Is this win by then?
Is this embarrassing?
I mean, it's the NFL, man. It's the NFL. You can't be embarrassed by that.
Well, it is embarrassing. And it's humiliating to be a Jets fan.
And he didn't just lose to the Dolphins. He lost to the team that he left in a mess.
Let's move on. He gone. Chris Johnson was outside Ross the locker room.
Ross takes the shotgun snap. Brooks throws inside. Ball is caught.
Not looking good.
Into the end zone. Seahawks win. Touchdown. Seahawks. Jacob Hollister, his second score. And the Seahawks win in dramatic fashion in overtime here at CenturyLink Field. What a game.
It's always a happy ending at the clink in these games. Steve Riebel, K-I-R-O with the call. Russell Wilson connects with Jacob Hollister. 10-yard score, opening possession of OT. Seahawks rally back. They win 40-34 over the Bucks. At the clink, as I said, Wilson continues a brilliant season. Just unbelievable. He's got 5 touchdowns in this in this game. It's a career high. And the biggest problem for the Seahawks right now, Mark, is Jason Myers, who can't make a kick, including a 40-yarder that he missed on the final play of regulation. But life's good on Seahawks corner, isn't it, bud?
They overcome. It seems like whatever happens to the Seahawks in a game.
In that building especially. They seem to always be the ones celebrating at the end of these tight games that go back and forth.
But I don't find that to be annoying with this team the same way I would with others we could point out that seem to live in a different cloudy hemisphere than the rest of normal suffering fans. Like the Seahawks, I like the way they're coached. I know a lot of Seahawks fans are down on Pete Carroll for various elements of the team this year.
Oh, stop it.
Well, no, I mean...
Not you, but come on.
That's just out there, but I...
What a disgrace.
We talked on Thursday about how the Bucks and Seahawks would mimic each other on some level, Greg. I think you thought that there were similarities. And I will concede that the Bucks, to me, the early part of this game was Tampa Bay, and we saw a little of it early on against that Rams, that explosion, that when they're on and when Jameis Winston isn't making mistakes, they are tough to deal with. Mike Evans is probably like the second best receiver in the league right now. He has almost 400 yards over 2 weeks. They compiled a 21-7 lead by basically executing long, enduring drives, 7 plays, 9 plays, 12 plays, 10 plays, all pumping in points off of this. And it's the game where I thought maybe Seattle has more issues than I thought because they start on defense and you can't ask Russell Wilson to dig you out of this hole week after week, but then it just plays to script in every possible way. Chris Carson was shut down early, but he had a big, big run in this that I thought galvanized Seattle on a scoring drive, and then they just got unhooked, and you're going to get something from Tyler Lockett every week that's magical, if not 2 or 3 things. And that formula all played out again, 40-34. By the way, I should mention that on NFL.com, our website, I will remind you we did our mid-season Super Bowl picks, and I picked Seattle. So that is looking very good.
What was your preseason Super Bowl
pick? To win the Super Bowl, you're saying?
To win the Super Bowl.
What was that preseason Super Bowl pick?
Don't remember what that was.
So taking the Bucks to overtime at home and having a negative scoring differential at home this year is really putting them over
because,
the top.
Because, Greg, that is really the difference, I think, sometimes between you and me, that you're digging into scoring differentials.
Well, he's also off Seahawks stats. Corner, and okay, he's no, hitting out.
But I'm talking about the total human angle of the Seahawks.
I get it.
No matter what happens to
them,
this is the end.
They're bad defensively.
Specialty, the human angle.
They are bad defensively, but that's okay.
They're just a bad defense. That's it.
But a bunch of bad defenses have been in Super Bowls, and I mean, we've seen Super Bowls that are 40-38. So
it could certainly happen.
That has never been the final score of a Super Bowl.
Well, there have been some close ones.
They are in the toughest.
I'm not a robot.
They are in the toughest division in football, and they're going to have to go through the 49ers. They play the Rams again, and so they'll be tested. I'm not surprised. I think the Bucs came up with some positive things during their bye week. They've looked better offensively. They have Jason Pierre-Paul back. But the Seahawks winning this game in one score was just wildly predictable. It's great. Every single yeah, they've been in the same amount of one-score games as the Bucks. It's insane.
What a great segment. I love any time Greg plays the heel and uses wildly as an adjutant.
DK Metcalf, by the way, he should be in that Offensive Rookie of the Year race, too. He has made that big of a difference.
He's been great.
And three of the plays he made today on the long touchdown, which was not on that, you know, supposed two-route tree, that the only things that he could run, that was a pretty advanced route. He made an incredible catch to set up the game-winning touchdown, and he made a player miss to set up what should have been the game-winning field goal. Like, he was a difference maker today.
And I also like that I said this to Mark during one of our Sky hits today. This probably doesn't even bear out. It just feels that way, that Tyler Lockett and Russell Wilson never have an incompletion.
Never have.
That he's only targeted like five or six times a game. It's almost like there's some type of like hidden number he can't go above. Well, today they targeted him like 100 times, and what did he have, 13 catches or whatever? Just throw the ball to Tyler Lockett and good things will happen. They have a great connection. I'll give you the 13 for 152, 18 targets and two touchdowns. Everything works out in that building for them. These close games. It always does.
Can't you be happy for them?
I am.
Okay. Oh, I sense a little bit of annoyed. You're a little annoyed.
I am a little bit annoyed in the sense that any franchise that it seems like it always works out. But then you think, all right, shut up, Dan. And like if Mina Kimes, for instance, is listening, she'd be like, what about Super Bowl 49? That should count as like 1,000 failures in your building. So maybe it's even Steven.
That does remind me. At the end of this game, they're like, "Oh, Dan was like, oh, Seahawks are going to get a call here. They always do.
It doesn't sound like a guy who's planting a flag on Seahawks corner.
They're also being aggressive, throwing the ball downfield and getting pass interference calls because that's what they do with the.
I'm on Seahawks corner because you had them penciled in at 7-9 in late August, and I said, no, they're going to figure out a way just like they always are, and here they are, 7-2.
That's amazing. If they throw the ball 40 times a game...
It sure is amazing.
If they throw the ball 40 times a game and embrace that, then I'm back. Let's cross our fingers. Keep doing it.
I'm sure that's how they're going to game plan from here on out. How do we lure Greg back into our fan fold?
Finally.
All right, let's move on.
Out of the shotgun on first down, fakes the handoff to Burkhead, throws to Edelman at the line, slips one tackler but won't get far, fumbles the ball, recovered by the Ravens. Marlon Humphrey has it, and he's streaking down the sidelines. He's to the 20, 10, 5, touchdown Ravens! Marlon Humphrey, Mr. Instant Score, strikes again!
Mr. Instant Score, that might stick. Jerry Sandusky, WBAL, with the call. Yes, Marlon Humphrey becomes the first Raven in team history to score touchdowns on fumble recoveries in back-to-back weeks. This one changed the game in Sunday Night Football. The Ravens get some much-needed breathing room, go on to win 37-20 over the New England Patriots, who fall for the first time this season. They're 8-1. The Ravens, meanwhile, move to 6-2. They have a stranglehold over the AFC North, and yes, you talk about the top of the AFC. They now have the tiebreaker on the Pats when you look at seeds and buys and all that good stuff. So that's what happened on Sunday night. Lamar Jackson, again, Mark, does his thing. He has a touchdown run. He has 60 more yards rushing, two more scores on the ground. He's just a different player than anybody else.
If I want to view this as a Ravens fan, different than other instances of New England dropping a game in the regular season, people typically overreacting before New England unfurls 8 straight wins and then detonates said team in the playoffs the second time around. It's that Baltimore won in the ways that they've won other games. 37 plus minutes of time of possession, 200 plus yards on the ground, Lamar Jackson doing things that no one can stop as he's roaming through cowed Patriots defenders, making all of us our jaws drop as we watch him run with the ball. I mean, they didn't have to become something other than what they've been all year, and they completely overpowered and streaks of dominant play tonight. That's very encouraging.
I think they're the hardest team in the NFL to prepare for, especially when they are at full strength, which they are with Hollywood Brown on the field. And there's no way you can come up with a defense that defends what Lamar Jackson did on that run where they had him cornered. As Wes said at the time, Lamar makes his own space. But ultimately, there's a spot in every game where you just got to make a great throw. And it's 24-20 in this game. The Patriots had just scored. They had just moved the ball up and down the field to start the third quarter. It's third down. Dan Hansis says before a 3rd-and-5, I believe, this this play decides the game. Yeah, it felt a little early with 7 minutes left in the third quarter. But you know what Lamar does? He drops a pass over the defense into the bucket against Mark Andrews. Not an easy pass to complete. He has a great drive. They score a touchdown. You're kind of right.
The Patriots, after falling behind early, got back into the game. Then they take the ball at the half. They start marching down the field again, and it feels like, uh-oh, they're about to take control of this game. The Marlon Humphrey turnover happens, but then the Pats go straight down the field again, and everyone's remarking on social media how gassed the Ravens' defense is, and then the Ravens are facing that third down, facing a potential third and three and out that would send that defense back on the field, and instead he converts it, turns it into a 14-play, 80-something yard drive and the touchdown, and at that point, the Ravens were in control of the game.
And John Harbaugh went for fourth and four on that drive instead of letting Justin Tucker kick, you know, what it would have been a 50-yard plus. And that showed some onions. That showed an awareness of what type of game it was.
And faith in the quarterback.
And a lot of faith in Lamar and faith in the numbers, as opposed to the Patriots, who didn't go for it on fourth in goal, you know, because I think Bill Belichick was hoping that it was going to turn into a lower-scoring game, and that wasn't in the cards.
It's hard to resist being hyperbolic about this game. The Ravens scored half the points that the Patriots have allowed on defense this year, or half the touchdowns, and 38% of the points the Patriots have allowed all year on defense. You look at this game and you think Lamar Jackson's an MVP candidate. It's another reminder that even though John Harbaugh's job was whispered about a couple of years ago, one of the top five coaches in the NFL, Greg Roman may be a head coach candidate, that Lamar Jackson landed with the exact right franchise, one willing to embrace analytics and put their whole offseason program around building the offense to suit Lamar Jackson's unique skills. This looks like a Super Bowl contender.
They are, and I think this has been a day in the AFC where the talk that I never believed in, that the Patriots are so far ahead of the pack, looks different, because the Chiefs get a big win without Mahomes, and Texans get a win. At least maybe they're in the mix, and the Ravens are in the... Now, that said, I also don't think it's that big of a loss for the Patriots. I think losses happen, that they're a growing team, that they need to be better on offense. I think at times tonight, they showed some things on offense that look pretty good. Mohamed Sanu is going to be a big addition for them.
10 catches.
It's a matchup game where they do not match up well with the Ravens' speed. If they see him again in the playoffs, they'll have seen it once. Maybe that helps them or not. Maybe they don't play the Ravens. But I just think there are other good teams in the AFC.
They would have had a 3-game lead on the entire AFC had they won this game.
I mean, we can talk about these teams knocking off New England in the regular season, but how many times has New England been beaten twice by the same team in 1 year? That's the thing. It's nice, but someone going and doing it to the Patriots in January a second time, that's the challenge.
And I warn anyone out there, you're going to listen to some sports talk shows in the morning and First Take type things that are going to say that the Patriots have been exposed, that the Patriots finally played a team that was worth a damn and got their asses whipped. Well, you know what? Calm down with that, because this is a bump in the road. And what's been a pretty dreadful season for people like me that either root for a bad team or root against the Patriots or both. This was a nice moment, but I am not here.
Well, they're not 16-0. You said this, and you said I was putting a reverse jinx on them. I really thought that it's a tough matchup.
You did pick the Ravens. It's the first time in the history of this podcast you picked against the Patriots.
They have a really tough schedule over the next 5 weeks. They go to Philadelphia after their bye. I think this is a perfectly timed bye. They need to get Isaiah Wynn back, their left tackle, eventually. You have to have a bye eventually. But also, I like going into the bye with a loss. I think Bill Belichick does like that. At Eagles versus Cowboys, at Texans versus Chiefs. I think those are five of the best teams, most talented teams that they could face. I think if they go 4-2 in that stretch, they already have a loss. They're going to get the one seed. If they go 3-3 in that stretch, they still might get the one seed. They're still in very good shape to round, you know, into getting home field.
I personally prefer to go into the bye on a win, but
this defense isn't the 85 Bears. I think we saw that. They got run on by the Browns last week. They got run on by the Ravens this week.
Don't count them out. They could go on another dominant stretch at any time. All right. Any final thoughts on this game?
Poor Mark. He couldn't even enjoy a Patriots loss, because then he realized oh, great, the Ravens are going to win the Super Bowl. Like,
well, I've already been to one live experience of watching Baltimore win the Super Bowl. I mean,
beating your wife's favorite team.
Right, one is enough, but it's going to be two because that's how the NFL fortunes seem to work in the favor for some of us or not in the favor.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. We'll be back on Tuesday with our next show where we'll break down the final game of Week 9, Monday Night Football, a matchup that pits the Dallas Cowboys and the New York Giants. And then also Thursday, and you know what happens Thursday, we preview Week 10. The wheel goes round and round. So thank you to everybody for both listening, watching. You guys are the best. Let's get out of here. Stan Hansa is signing off. For Quiet Storm, the mailman, the old boss, Ricky Hollywood, Matty Tant filling in. Everybody doing their share. Till Tuesday.